Good morning, everyone. I am Warid Ahmed, and I have here with me today
Abdul Majid.
It is Friday today, the 13th of December. And with Friday, there always comes good news. It's a good day. It's a weekend. Yeah. We're entering the weekend. How are you feeling today, Majid?
Lack of energy, but a lot of hope that maybe I'll get some time to sleep on this weekend.
Yes, yes.
Some extra time to sleep on this weekend.
Maybe I'll get some time to read. I miss reading. Yeah. I miss it so much. You know, last night I was thinking, by the way, as I was going to sleep, I was just stressing about a couple of things that I have coming up and what I need to do and how I need to do it. And I was thinking about it like this. And I wonder if you also like share this perspective of the fact that, you know, pressure is a privilege. Do you get what I mean? Like, if you're somebody, you know, you feel like you're under pressure because you have a bunch of things to do, in hindsight, it's actually a privilege.
Yeah.
Because you have things to do. You have things to plan. You have things coming up. Like, it's a future in a way.
Yeah. And also, building on that, I feel that I always believe in that cliched saying that everyone is wherever he or she is, someone wants to be there. So whichever position you're always in, you think maybe it's hectic, maybe it's bad, maybe it's not good, all that. Maybe you're going through a negative period. But someone, when you look down, someone wants to be in that life. Someone wants to be in your shoes.
Exactly.
Someone wants that kind of responsibility or work maybe or whatever. So, yeah, the idea is always look down, be humble. The tree with the fruit is always hanging low.
Mm.
So, yeah, always look down. See the people who are struggling, maybe with finding a job or doing the job or anything.
Mm.
And always be thankful for whatever you have. That's the main idea.
I agree.
Even if it's a bad time, it too shall pass.
You know, Majid, I remember there was a time in my childhood where, okay, let me just put this out there. I hate the lab. I really hate the lab. Like, doing experiments, I hate it. No. I'm being
like
serious with you.
Like chemistry or physics experiments?
Chemistry. When you specifically, and when I say experiments, I don't mean like cutting a heart or cutting a kidney. I mean like, for example, what's it called? I'll give you an example of an experiment. You know aspirin?
Yeah.
The reason why Majid aspirin was developed was because of the fact that before aspirin, they actually used to use salicylic acid to heal people. That's the active ingredient in aspirin. But what ended up happening is if you're taking salicylic acid, hello, your guts are going to be destroyed. So that's why they developed aspirin. But then this study came out that's trying to warn people, like, guys, don't put your medicine in hot temperatures.
Yeah.
Because basically what happens is when you put like a medicine like aspirin, for any medicine, guys, please do not put your medicines in hot locations. Don't do that. What will happen is these medicines, they'll hydrolyze. They'll like break down. And aspirin specifically, when you put it under heat, it's going to break down and it's going to break down into that salicylic acid.
Hmm.
So when you're taking that medicine, you might cause yourself more harm than you know. Anyways, back to the experiment. Let me tell you why I don't like them. I was doing an experiment where I was finding out how the concentration of salicylic acid changes while during the breakdown of aspirin. Oh my God. Magic. Oh my God. You don't want to know. You don't want to know the process that goes into this. Do you know how you reach the final result? You have to actually use concentrations of salicylic acid on their own, and you have to do it with aspirin. Then you have to graft both of them. Then you have to bring them together. What I'm saying right now does not bring this process any justice, but let me just tell you, I hated it. That's the reason why I didn't become a doctor.
You could have become a chemist.
No. I really hated it because it's like one wrong thing and it could all go wrong. It could all go absolutely wrong. And I remember just on that topic of gratitude, I was telling my cousins this. I was like, guys, I hate the lab. Like, man, I just can't reach the results that I need that are accurate. It takes a long time, by the way. Like, man, I respect people in the lab. People in the lab, like, let's give them some credit.
Yeah.
Wait, no, I'm being serious. Do you know how long it takes to reach these like results? Do you know what it, like, even if your results are precise, they're all close to each other, they're all similar, they might be completely wrong, just saying. But anyways, point is, I complained to my cousins about this. Like, guys, like, I hate the lab because it was a very bad time. Mm-mm. And then my cousins looked at me and they're like, you know, Ward, we've never seen labs in our life.
We would love
I just went completely silent. They're like, you know, the beaker, the Chronicle Flask, like we've never seen that in our lives. Like all we're ever used to is actually drawing.
Oh, yeah, it's
actually, and it, like everything I complain about to them, like, oh, guys, this happened, this. Like, even when I like tell them something about my parents, they're like, stop right there. We went to government schools.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they went to government schools where school was, when you actually convert the currency from the Sudanese dinar, it was just 1,000 dirhams a year. My school was way more expensive. Yeah. And whenever I said anything, they just look at me. They're like, Ward, we've ever done is draw them. Like, we want to know how it feels like to be in the lab. We want to know how it feels like to do all of these things. So, no, yes, I completely agree with you. You know,
on your point of fees, it's a whole industry, the education industry. I call it industry. I think
it's a business.
The education people will, some of them will hate me for this. It's an industry, it's a business.
You're right.
The only thing that I love about schools, and it's a very, not a rare occurrence, now it's become quite, like it's 20% at least, that teachers are now more, and in the UAE especially, what I've seen, my son is going to school, so I've seen the teachers are passionate now again. There was a time when teaching was a sacred profession, then there came a time of capitalization where if everything was about money, the teachers were about money, if they're getting good pay, they'll be happy, they'll be good with kids, they'll teach them better. But now I think through this region, what I've seen is there is a change. The teachers are well paid and they're happy with the kids. The kids are learning.
Happy with the kids.
Happy with the kids. As
have you spoken to a teacher recently, Matt?
Yeah.
Well, you have?
I love my son's teacher. I know she's not that highly paid, like very highly paid, but she's very satisfied in the job. She takes care of like 14, 15 children. Depends on
how
that also.
How old are all of them though?
Four and a half.
They're like
KG1, the very first class.
See, I feel like their case is entirely different. Yeah. Recently, I just spoke to one of my favorite political science teachers and we were having a conversation and I was just, you know, she was just congratulating me. She was like, oh, I saw your interview with Kiyosaki. Imagine, they still catch up with me. They're the sweetest. But you know what she said to me? She went like, Ward, like, you won't believe it, man, but kids have no curiosity to learn nowadays. Yeah. And she teaches like the, you know, bit older, the ones like that are going to graduate soon. She told me that because of AI, which we talk about so much, she said that kids really don't have a curiosity to learn. She said that like it's different now. Like, you know, the way that you guys, because see, we were, by the way, the last, I remember this very specifically because I spoke to people in the last cohort when I graduated, they had AI. ChatGPT had just come out. For us, it didn't come out.
Yeah.
So no, we put the work in, we put the work in. And even when I started university, by the way, because I didn't use it in high school, I wasn't used to using it. I don't use it that much. Yeah. No, yes, I use it to help me fix my grammar, spelling, all that, but I don't use ChatGPT the way that upcoming generations rely on it. And this teacher told me it's so hard for me to teach a class that is not intellectually curious. And they're not curious because it's like, it's just very easy for them to put something in, boom, they have the answer. Do you know what I mean?
I personally think that I agree with you to an extent. The only problem
that
I have...
I didn't say this, the teacher said it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The teacher's point of view is correct to an extent, but I think a teacher's role comes right here. I never call a teacher a teacher. It's not a teacher's job to teach, actually. It's a facilitating job. And after like the fifth grade or the sixth grade, the kids have a mind of their own. They have a brain of their own. They can read. Whatever is written, they can read.
What do you mean it's not the teacher's job to teach?
I guess after like the fifth grade at least, I think a kid can read. He can read whatever language the book is in. He can read it. The teacher's responsibility is to facilitate the process of learning. Whatever they read, explaining the concepts, not teaching from the book. So it's more facilitation. It's and at the university level, it's more facilitation.
But how does that look, though?
For example, if you read, you've done business, right? So if you read a book on business ethics, you'll have 10 books. You can read all of them, right?
Yeah.
And you can derive your own ideas from it that, oh, I think out of these 10 books, this author made more sense, or these three authors had this idea about blah, 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 ethics and this. You can derive all of that.
Yeah.
But then you need a teacher to bounce your ideas off. Like, this is what I think about the book, but I don't have any practical experience in the world. You've come from a practical experience standpoint.
You mean like guide my thinking?
Yeah. Now tell me, am I thinking right? Am I thinking wrong? And not even right or wrong. just telling your ideas to a person who has been in the industry or who is experienced.
See, I,
so you have a conversational partner.
Some of these teachers are not experienced, yes, by the way. They've been teachers their entire life.
I prefer a teacher who spent some time in the industry. Because they bring ideas,
often.
They'll help you understand a concept in just two sentences. That teacher who's been a career teacher won't be able to do it.
I don't agree with you, Magic.
Because
I don't.
Yeah, I remember clearly, again, one of my teachers, she was teaching PR. It was an introductory course, very basic. Before that, I had just seen in my summer break a lot of documentaries, was free, had no internship at that point. So I saw a lot of documentaries about media, blah, blah, blah. And I came across this documentary. It's a four-part series by BBC, The Century of Self. So it's
the
about
how... The Century of Self.
The Century of
Self.
I will
write this down.
The idea in that whole documentary is how PR and marketing is done through demographics and how the whole idea of PR and marketing originated.
And what was her experience?
She did her master's and just started teaching. She never worked in a PR agency. She never worked in marketing. She had zero experience off field. She only had theoretical knowledge. So when I went into the class, the problem for me was I came from, like, I already had a base and she was teaching the basics. So for a lot of the people in the class, it was good. They were happy with it. But I was like, okay, maybe I'll run with the class. After three or four classes, I started questioning about Edward Bernays. He's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. He's the father of PR. She didn't know about him. I was like, you don't know the father of PR. You're teaching me introduction to PR, like public relations. How is that possible? So, yeah, a teacher. And then I had teachers who worked at Mindshare, biggest media group in Pakistan, buying and selling. And that guy never referred to a book. He would just come in this class, we'll start a discussion on something, he'll tell us practical experiences.
By the way, these are my least favorite teachers.
No, I
you
believe,
know why?
See, practically, there's...
They're teaching you about real life, but think about it like this, Majid. School, you know, education, the institution, for you to actually get your diploma, for you to get your certificate, what do you need to do? You need to pass and you need to score high. If anything, those teachers you're speaking about with all that experience, I'll just tell you, they're my least favorite. You know why? They don't help you pass the exam. Because they're waffling. Oh. You know when they're so passionate and they're so enthusiastic and they have a PhD that they're waffling so much and they're giving, but it's like, okay, what's on the exam though? That's how I think about it. No, I think about it like that because, okay, you can tell me all your experience and everything, but those professors, by the way, I found that a lot of people in their class never scored that well. Do you know why? Because they're more of having the discussions with them rather than them telling them, like, what's going to come on the exam?
The purpose of education is not passing exams.
Exactly.
The purpose of education is mainly to learn.
Yes,
that
it's
is
mainly
what learning
to learn.
Has
yes,
always been.
Yes, yes, it's mainly to learn.
But you need to pass the exam to get
a
degree.
You know, Majid, like, back
that is why I'm so against degrees. I never went to my, what are those called, convocations? I never threw my cap up.
I
was a silver medalist in my university and didn't go to collect the medal. I was a gold medalist. I was relegated because I skipped the first semester because of an illness and they were like, no, we can't give the gold to the guy who has skipped the semester. And then I was a silver medalist in my master's. I didn't go to the convocation. My father was like, why? I was like, I don't want to participate in all these theatricals.
Why not?
Because
you're celebrating yourself.
For me, the main part of those 4 and 2 years of master's and bachelor's was learning. So for me, the learning part, if that part was being done, I think that is the main purpose of education. Learning.
See, imagine.
Not degrees, not throwing caps and the theatrics.
Imagine, I completely agree with you on the learning part. The throwing caps part, I think you're alone on that one. I think you should
do
it.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people, everyone disagreed with me. Everyone was there.
Celebrate yourself. Be with your peers. But see, the thing is, Majid, for me, it's like, I agree with you on the learning part. And and by the way, like in school, I was always somebody who, oh my God, my friends always called me really extra. When I was trying to do an assignment or an exam, I try to learn from it, not just pass. However, you know what I noticed? Okay, I'll give you an example. I knew this kid back in school. His name is Qasim. I really hope he doesn't hear me saying this, but he's really smart. He's a really smart person. I'm not joking with you. But this man, when the exam, like when we were in physics class together, he was really smart. And he knew all of these things and he could hold a discussion and he could hold a debate on physics. I can't hold a debate on physics. But guess what? When the exams came, I got the good grades. He did not. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of billionaires are university dropouts. They can't
pass the
exams,
You know what it takes to pass the exams? It doesn't take that kind of learning you're talking about. It takes actually connecting the dots, seeing what the criteria, the rubric wants you to do, and you doing what they want you to for the exam. Do you know what I mean? And also on the teachers thing, teachers with experience, I disagree with you on that point because I actually often find that teachers who went from a career to becoming teachers lost hope or something with their career. Yeah. I'll give you an example. My history teacher, she was amazing. Miss Linda Cation, she was absolutely amazing. There was actually one subject when I graduated that I scored full marks on, and it was history. I loved history. I wanted to be a historian, but my parents said no. Yeah. But that's
There's no money in it.
But history is like gossip.
Yeah.
It's literally like gossip. It's so entertaining.
Oh, this happened.
No, literally. It's. I remember there was. I forgot if it was the U.S. president or was the Russian president. They went to visit Mao, in China. And what basically happened is because Mao knew. I think it was Khrushchev, or Eisenhower, because he knew that they couldn't swim. You know where he had their first meeting? In the swimming pool. Can you, like, it's just funny power plays, but not the point. The point is that this teacher, she actually used to be a journalist.
Nice.
Before she started working as a history teacher. And you know what she told me? She told me that because I told her, I was like, you know, after being a historian, it would be my dream to actually become a journalist one day. And she told me this is not going to work out. There's no future in this. You don't get paid well. You get overworked. And it's like, now that I'm in this spot that I am in life, I completely disagree with her. She was being completely negative because the career she wanted failed. And so she went on to teaching. So that's why I think when they have a background, if anything, they're more negative, because if you had a life before teaching, why'd you start teaching? But there are very rare few who are very passionate. Yeah. There are very
I think the teachers who can maintain that balance between having a career somewhere else and then teaching, the part-time ones, they're better. They're the best ones because they're already working in the industry and they're up with all the trends and everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And they're coming to teach you as well, making time for it. I guess that's the best way.
Yeah, it is the best way. And just going back to our topics for the day, I did say today it's Friday, it's good news time, and we have amazing news from His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid. He highlighted that 2024 is a very historic year for the economic progress during the year-end cabinet meeting in Abu Dhabi. So the UAE actually achieved first place in 223 global development indicators and ranked in the top five for 444 others. And, you know, this included initiatives like the formation of the Emirates Entrepreneurship Council, this 300 million dirham fund to support youth entrepreneurship, 7 million dirham award for federal employees during bureaucracy, and a national policy to preserve the UAE's modern architectural heritage. This is really amazing news.
And since it was the last, so they decided on a lot of things. As you said, so many things coming up, the Entrepreneurship Council, a fund for entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, all these things, they reflect that UAE has a very strong commitment to sustain its position, which it has right now.
Yeah.
Everyone is looking at UAE right now. And this shows that they want to stay at the top. They don't want to, like, for example, 223 global development indicators, they're number one. So next year, they want to be there in at least 300. So looking forward, that's the best thing about this.
Yeah.
All these initiatives that they've announced. The whole meeting was a nice meeting that happened.
Yeah.
Kasr al-Hussein. Right?
Kasr al-Hussein.
So yeah, usually it takes place at that place. I've heard it's a very beautiful place. I've never been there, but I want to go someday watch. So yeah, all these initiatives, mainly the highlight was the entrepreneurship one. 300 million for entrepreneurs, just free money, just go do what
free
you think.
Free money is crazy.
I would, to be honest, the way and UAE are building, Abu Dhabi is building, they have money which now they have surpluses in accounts, they have the money to give it to people to go find their entrepreneurial spirit, start businesses, start new ideas, work on new ideas. Mm. So that's the good thing about a very nice developed economy. You have the money to give to people to go experiment. And that is what UAE is.
That's so amazing for the locals and the locals in this country. You know, we've seen like the homegrown businesses that they create. You know, we see it in Mizzim Chocolate and Home Bakery. Yeah. I love how all the ones I mention are food. I really am such a foodie. But we do see in this country that, you know, they're homegrown businesses. You know, Majid Al-Futtaim, they're all doing completely lovely. And
Imar.
Exactly.
Imar is the best. I remember whenever I go to the fountain and I see Burj Khalifa, now it's gone down a little bit, the excitement, because I've seen it so many times. But I always try to listen to conversations that are happening there. I know it's eavesdropping, it's bad, but it's a
Imagine.
Public place and the people
That's
are...
nosy.
Yeah, but it's like you're in a crowd, so you can
I
hear like five, six things.
I get what you mean.
But then I try to concentrate on bits and parts
this
of
This is why you're a journalist.
Yeah, it's a
it's a
force of habit, always listening to everything that's happening around you, being observed.
Yeah.
So the conversations that are here are so amazing, so interesting. People
say?
Are always talking about, why is there Imar always here? They see so much Imar in that place. You go and you'll see there's Imar. And they're like, who is this guy? What is this company that they have so many buildings right in the heart of Dubai? Because Fountain, Burj Khalifa, everything. So that way they come to know the brand that, this is a brand. So this also happens with a lot of eateries that you're talking about. People want to know, like, how did this become so big? And people from across the globe, like, everyone is there. In this season, though, it's impossible for you to...
I like going every once in a while, by the way.
Yeah, it's a nice experience.
Honestly, it never loses its charm for me. I've been seeing it since I was a kid.
Yeah.
I will continue seeing it, and I don't mind. Like, and you know what? Much more exciting than watching it. I just love seeing other people excited to watch it, right? It's like...
It's just contagious, right?
Yeah, it's like, you're not that impressed, but, like, you're all impressed. Yeah. Okay, let me, like, actually stick around. Because it's such a big crowd. It's such a large crowd, but...
And one specific thing that I love to do there is I just go out. I don't look at Burj Khalifa and the fountain show. I just sit on the stairs. There's like whole thing, round thing. You can sit on the stairs. So I sit there. I have my coffee with me. And I just look at people. So you see nationalities. You hear
that
languages. It's like you're sitting in the center of the world.
Exactly.
The experience. You'll listen to people and you'll be like, let's try to guess what language they're speaking. You'll see them dress so nicely. You'll see them make TikToks and Instagram videos and all of that. And that's so interesting because some guy is sitting on the floor.
Oh my God. This is so funny that you say that because when you said Ahmar properties, I started thinking of that TikTok. It's so bad, Majid. Whenever somebody says something, I start thinking of a TikTok audio.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, it's so weird how my brain is wired. When you said Ahmar properties, I was thinking of that TikTok audio that goes like, where's Emma? Emma, where's Emma? And I've seen so many TikToks of it with Ahmar properties.
Yeah.
But just like on the news of entrepreneurs, like just this morning, a story was released by the Daily Mail that the pretty little thing billionaire, Omar Kamani, that they're going to launch it soon, Kamani Living in the UAE. It's basically going to be like a real estate company that's going to help you invest with other real estate developers and help you find properties yourself. And that in itself, it's so crazy. Yeah. It's like a lot of people, especially like, for example, Omar Kamani, as I mentioned, they're seeing the opportunity here.
Yeah.
They are, you know, they're seeing the opportunity and they're not just seeing it and ignoring it. They're coming. They're all coming, and we're just
going
to see more of this.
And he's bringing Naomi Campbell with. They're starting Naomi Campbell, world famous like supermodel. So if you don't know her, I didn't know her like 5-6 years ago because not into like a lot of fashion shows and fashion industry.
But everyone knows her.
Yeah, but I just knew there is a person that exists. I couldn't put a face to that name, but now I know her. So. Mainly, she's collaborating with Umar to bring a talent agency here.
Yeah.
He himself has a very nice private gym where only celebrities come to train. We've seen the likes of so many people. Jake Paul trained at his gym for one of his fights. So every celebrity that comes to Dubai, they prefer to go to the Umar Kamani gym. And he has a collection of supercars. So He is a person who shows you how good Dubai can be if you have that entrepreneurial
spirit. He's right.
You try to build something,
right.
You will build it.
And by the way, Kamani Living, their newly launched real estate company, it's actually a subsidiary of their main Kamani Properties company, which is based, I believe, in London.
Yeah.
And that they also have real estate properties in New York and Mumbai. And Dubai is actually just a part of their new expansion. Yeah. And that is saying a lot. That is really, really saying a lot. And now for our next topic for today.
Saudi Arabia.
Yes. Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia's public investment fund is close to acquiring a 6% stake in PGA's Tour Enterprises, the commercial branch of the PGA Tour. Now, this investment is going to be valued at $1.5 billion. Very big numbers here. And what this is going to do is that it's going to increase the enterprise's worth to $12 billion. And, you know, the only thing that's, you know, going to make this official is that they're awaiting approval from the U.S. Justice Department, which is reviewing the PGA Live merger for antitrust concerns.
Yeah. The main background, in very simple words, is PGA Tour is the biggest tour in the world for golf. The biggest, best players play there because the prize amount is insane as well, millions of dollars. Tiger Woods, everyone that you know in golf plays there. The problem was recently in the past like 3-4 years, Saudi PIF backed Live Golf. They came into the scene and they started their own tour. Now PGA Tour obviously had a problem with that. They didn't want the control they have over golfing scene to go away. So Live Golf, and they had a feud for nearly 2 years. And then finally, because Live Golf was attracting the biggest talents because bigger pool money. So those players are like, okay, we'll play
there. Do you have names, Majid?
For Live Golf?
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone went.
Really?
There was a time that I remember one of the PGA Tour events, only 2 out of the top 10 were playing in PGA Tour event and all the other 8 had joined Live Golf.
Wow.
So PGA realized that they're losing the fight to PIF backed Live. So they finally came to the table, they started talking, and they're trying to find a merger in between. But the US Justice Department has to approve that merger. And then PIF, this deal, which is reported by Bloomberg and a lot of bigger publications, that it is in the works. As soon as the result for the PGA Live merger comes out, they will go. And this I love this story for the sole reason that Saudi Arabia's PIF, $1 trillion giant, they're making all the power play moves. They're going into everything. And
they're like, we have the money,
we'll buy you.
You're right. And you know, when I was like looking at this story and specifically focusing on Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, you know, just recently me and Majid discussed how they purchased more than 50% stake. I believe it was in NBC. They did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they purchased more than 50%.
That was an internal investment, but NBC is...
And NBC, that's like one of the largest media companies in the Middle East. And now we're seeing them once again, they're investing stake into this. It's like, and you know what I'm basically seeing from all of this? And like, look at all the football players that came to
Saudi
Arabia. You know, Ronaldo, Neymar, Benzema.
Everyone.
It's like, you know, when I'm taking a look at this, Majid, it's truly so surreal because they are diversifying.
Yeah.
They are diversifying. You know, we're seeing them diversify and it's actually coming into a reality. You know, the one thing I regret, Majid, when I was speaking to Robert Kiyosaki and I asked him, would you invest into the Middle East? And he said, no. You know what I mean?
And he started telling me
it's all oil. It's all oil. The one thing I wish I did was argued back and said, no, it's not all oil. They're diversifying.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in this. Like, man, like every single field, like football, now you got golf. Like Saudi Arabians are going to have everything.
Yeah, I love the post, the video I did in the post. The post is there about this whole story on Instagram. The video that I put in there, I loved that video. I saw it like 1.5 years ago. It was a Guardian interview with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And he specifically says, he says, call it whatever. You call it sports washing, green washing, whatever.
Yeah.
If it adds to my GDP and I have a target of 1 to 1.5 5%. If it adds that amount to my GDP, call it whatever, I will do it. That's the attitude of Saudi Arabia right now, and it's a very positive, very assertive attitude.
Yeah.
It's not like they're dominating on the basis of their money. Mm. They're telling that this money will bring something back to us. It will add to our GDP. So why not? Everyone does it. Why not us? So that's the main idea. Just on that point, I was working on the story before the show. It's a very big story. We'll talk about it in detail tomorrow. But London's Heathrow Airport just got a new major stakeholder. It's RDN. It's a French-owned company. But the main idea of the story is RDN went into buying the majority stake with PIF. Mm. So PIF and RDN now control the biggest stake, that is like 37 point something percent. So
in Heathrow Airport.
Yeah.
They control so the
They have now finally officially signed it. They announced the deal in June, but obviously regulatory approvals and all that. Now they finally signed it. So RDN, a French company, has the majority stake in London's Heathrow Airport, one, and the second majority stake is with PIF. And both of them went together in the deal. They were like, we'll go together and then you buy some part. So 23 or 27% is RDN and PIF has 15%.
15%,
so
okay.
Together, they are the largest majority holders in the shares of London's Heathrow. Mm. It's an iconic, it's the biggest airport.
That's insane.
This is the kind of moves they're making. This is the kind of moves that we're seeing from PIF. And it's not going to stop. Till 2030, don't expect anything small from PIF. They're going big and they're going to the biggest.
But you know, Majid, when you mentioned this story, what specifically intrigues me is that, remember when we did this story about how Saudi Arabia, they like implemented this policy where they want to have more investments in the actual country than outside.
Yeah.
And they were reducing it from some percentage.
Nearly 18-20% they're trying to reduce.
And it's like, they're still making these big moves while meeting their goals. And they're going to continue meeting their goals.
The main idea of that, even reducing it, was that, for example, they're spending $1 million outside. Mm. They want to reduce 18-20% because that $1 million they've already spent is bringing money.
Mm.
So eventually, the whole value of their investment outside will remain the same. So that's very interesting that whatever they're making on that $1 million, they invested billions outside, but whatever the money they're making on it, they're using it to bring money into their startups, into their own things. So that's a very nice way of handling your money. It's like it'll be written in the history books when your teacher will teach you this.
Do we have time for the last topic today?
No, we'll say Talabat. Share,
yes.
They finally gained on day three. They ended up at 1.51. Just a summary, they started at 1.6 on day one. The market opened at 1.7, very good sign, but then throughout the first day, they closed at 1.49. Not a very bad low, but a bad low. But then they recovered on day two, went up to 1.55, but then closed the day again at 1.49. And everyone was like, okay, what is happening? But finally on day three, they increased 0.02 points. So 1.49, they went up to 1.51.
So ended on a good note.
And that is the closing.
So
yeah, the idea that the share was priced between 1.5 and 1.6, they will trade at, after 3 days of keeping an eye on it, their share price on average will stay around 1.5. The lower side. They were subscribed at a higher side, but the share price now,
it's not
now,
too bad. 1.51 is not too bad.
The good thing is they're between their range. If they fell to 1.3 or 4, then people would be like, okay, Talabat didn't do great. But they are between the price range. They were subscribed at a higher one, but they're trying to survive on the lower range.
But not too bad. Not too bad.
They're doing good.
So ending the show on a good note, thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Have a lovely, lovely weekend. Don't forget to read our newsletter on Smashy TV. You can also find us on X, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and YouTube. Thank you so much for watching. Have a lovely weekend.
Bye-bye.